We're holding on Samach Zayin Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Continuing with the Avodah of Yom Kippur, we now have the Seir L'Azazel was sent off. And so the Mishnah continues, Bolei Etzel Par V'Seir HaNisrafin. The Kohen Gadol now comes over to the Par and Seir which needs to be burnt. So by now, they'd already been shechted long before, but he already finished with the blood of them and the Kodesh Kedoshim and the Heichal and so forth. Now comes what he needs to do with the bodies of those animals. A Kron, he tears them open, cuts them open. He takes out the emurim that need to be brought on the mizbeach, and this means, of course, the mizbeach achitza, not the mizbeach apnimi. The only thing you ever offer on the mizbeach apnimi aside from ketores is the blood of these parim and seirim and nisrafim, the emurim of them go on the mizbeach achitza. Good morning, Ali. So Kron, he tears them open, vahotzias emurehen, he takes out the emurim, nisan and bamogis, he puts them in a bowl, the emurim of the par and the sir, v'ichtiron agabi ha-mizbeach, and he offers them and burns them on the mizbeach. We'll see about the exact details of that in the Gemara. The actual offering, the actual burning of them doesn't take place now, it takes place only a little later, so we'll see that in the Gemara. Next. Now, these parim and nisrafim and seirim and nisrafim, what happens is, after the chalev, after the emurim are brought on the mizbeach, the rest of them has to be taken outside Yerushalayim and burnt. So how do they do that part? Kla'an v'miklois, they braided them together like braids, v'hotzi on the base of shefa, and took them out to be burnt. So Rashi describes what they had is, there would be two poles, one person carrying each end, so you have four people. So you have four people, two in front, two in back. They're walking one pole next to the other. The par and the sir are placed on them, and to keep them from falling off, they would be sort of like braided together, they'd tuck in the leg of one under the body of the other, and all over, in order that they both stay steady in place, and then they carry them outside Yerushalayim. There's a few other explanations what this kloin b'miklois is, and in fact there is a girsa, the maklois, that they would weave them together on sticks, which can mean the sticks themselves were woven together, like made in a crosswise pattern, or it can mean that the Rambam and a few other Rishonim understand that what they did is they cut the animals like they made large cuts, large gashes here and there in the animals, but they kept each animal is basically still held together by its skin and some of its muscles. So therefore, it looks sort of like a braid. So therefore, each animal individually looks like a braid, and they had them draped over the sticks that way. Anyway, the point is that now they took them out of Yerushalayim to be burnt. Now, at what point do the people who are carrying them and burning them render their clothes become tamei? Like we had yesterday with the Seir L'Azazel, where the person who takes it to Azazel becomes tamei and his clothes become tamei, so it is also, the Pasuk says, with the people who are burning the par and the seir. So they become tamei, their clothes become tamei. So at what point during the procedure do they become tamei? Mishi yetsu chut v'choymas ha'azara. Once they walk out of the wall of the azara, as we'll see in the Gemara why. Reb Shimon omer mishi yatsa sa'ur b'rubon. Reb Shimon says it's a later stage once the fire catches on to most of the animal. Again, for reasons that we're going to see in the Gemara why he holds that. Okay. So the Gemara asks, now we're going to learn in the next Mishnah, actually, that they had to wait with the next part of the Avodah until they found out, and we'll see in the next Mishnah how they found out that the Seir had reached the desert already, that it had already reached the cliff. So now, why in our Mishnah do we have all this detail of what he's doing about cutting open the par and seir and taking out the emurim? So actually, the Rabbi Yosef Kurkur, son of Rambam, explains that maybe this cutting them open and taking out the emurim is not really in and of itself an avoida. It's something that has to be done, and the Kohen Gadol has to do it. But it's not really an avoida per se. Therefore, he can be doing it while they're waiting for the par and the seir. While they're waiting to find out whether the guy finished with the Seir L'Azazel. Meanwhile, after that, then they're going to need a break before they can continue with the next part of the Avodah, which we're going to learn in the next parak about reading from the Torah and doing the other things. On the other hand, Rabbeinu Yohanan says that actually the reading we're going to learn at the beginning of the next parak we'll start it today, Be'ez Hashem, that, in fact, at this point, that now that the Kohen Gadol is going to be leaning from the Torah, he says actually that's why they put it in Davka at this point, because they need something to do to fill up the time while he's dealing with the Sarah La'azazel. As we talked about yesterday, it's going to take several hours for him to get to the cliff. If it's 10 mil or 12 mil, according to the different opinions that we had, it's still quite a long walk. So therefore, Rabbeinu Yohanan learns that during that time is when he would be leaning and it would help fill up the time. According to the other Rishonim, no, it means that we're saying over here that he can cut open the par and sur and take out their emurim, but everything else, including the laning and including the continuation of the avoda, is going to have to wait until they find out that the sur had reached the cliff. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. What do you mean that he is machtu them now, the emurim? He's not doing that now. He's doing that only later in the next perek. Later on, in the next parak, we're going to talk about the remaining. So far, we've only been through two changes of clothes of the Kohen Gadol. He started out the day in Bigdei Zahav and brought the Korban Tamid in the morning and the various other things. Then he changed into Bigdei Lavan in the middle of Parak Gimel and then started this specific Avodah of Yom Kippur. And he's been in Bigdei Lavan this whole time, the rest of the third, fourth, fifth, and now the sixth parak. Now in the next parak, he's going to do Kiddush Adayim Raglayim and Tovel and change into Bigdei Zahav and do more of the Avodas, he's going to be bringing some of them with Safim and doing other things. Then he's going to be again in Bigdei Lavan, then he's going to be in Bigdei Zahav, and only then is he, with the last time around, is he going to be burning these Emurim. So why are we saying Vihik Tiran, that he's mocking them now, when that's only going to be actually much later on? No, you're right. It doesn't mean that he's master of them now. It means he puts them in a bowl in order to later on to get them ready to later on offer on the Mizbeach. He's not going to be offering them on the Mizbeach until sometime later. Rashi mentions that he had a Gyusa in front of him, which he doesn't like, that the Gemara's question was actually, we're not offering them on the Mizbeach in the bowl, so why do we use the expression that he puts them in a magus, vihik tiran, and then is makrid them on the Mizbeach, implying as though he's makrid them in the bowl. The word magus, by the way, means a bowl. You have by the Karbonis of the Nesim, Karbonis Karas Kesef Achas, Targum Onkelos translates Karas as Megissa. So Rashi mentions that Gyusa. Rashi doesn't like it because there's a few other places in Shas where you have that because that's no problem. The same way as Rashi mentions, you have such expressions in other places where it says you put them in a bowl and then you mock with them. It doesn't mean you mock with them in the bowl. It just means that you put them in a bowl and then from there you're going to be mocked with them. So the Gemara wouldn't have a problem with that over here. On the other hand, Tosfos and Tosfos Yeshanim have a long discussion about it, about various reasons why we should be Gerdus that, because it's one thing in a different place. The Gemara asks us about a Korban Mincha, because a Mincha has to be placed in a Kli Shoreis. You have to have a Mincha has to be in a Kli Shoreis to begin with, and the Koimetz has to be placed in another Kli Shoreis. So therefore, it makes sense that you have to have it in a bowl. Here, the question would be, the Emurim don't require a bowl at all. You can bring them up to the Mizbeach, you can bring them up to the Mizbeach not in anything at all. And then Tosfos goes on with a couple of other possibilities. One of them being that, okay, we understand you need to put them in a bowl. You're not just going to leave them lying on the floor. That would be disrespectful to the Kodshim. So we know you have to put them. We know you have to put them in a bowl. But when you bring them up to the Mizbeach, they don't have to be in a bowl. So why are we saying specifically Nesaron and Megas V'Kiron, implying that they must be in a bowl? So Tosfos does have that Gyusa and keeps it in.
Okay.
Kohen is so small, it's smallish, it's the size of a Kohen's handful, yeah. But here they mortar. Right. Yeah, it's inside his handful, yeah. Tosfos also mentions, once the Gemara mentions this question in one place in connection with Menachos, and in one place in connection with Korbanos, then it doesn't need to ask it again and again. But in any case, what we mean is, again, the Kohen Gadol is not actually offering these Emurim right now. He's putting them in the bowl, and then they're being set aside, and he's only going to be offering them on the Mizbeach much later in the procedure. we said clawn the mikloys, then we said they wove them together, or according to the Rambam, it means that to begin with they cut them into large chunks which are still partially attached together, so it looks like braids. Amar Rabbi Yechanan kamin klia, so that's what Rabbi Yechanan says. It means they did it like a braid. We're talking about the animals, the bodies of the par and the sur, which are now going to be carried outside Yerushalayim to be burned. So we're saying that they were saying before. They said they braided them. It means, for example, that they put the leg of one under the body of the other, or they wove them in and out, or they maybe made holes in one of them and then stuck the legs of one animal and the arms of one animal into the other. The point is in order to keep them together. Well, we're going to see in the Gemara also that to carry them out of Yerushalayim, they had to be whole, but before they burnt them, they had to cut them up. So according to the Rambam, actually what they're doing is they're partially cutting them up beforehand. They're still each in one big piece, but they're not completely attached together. The various arms and legs and organs and whatever are like semi-attached. They're still partially attached by some of the skin and some of the muscles, but not all of them. So therefore, it kind of resembles a braid in that sense, which kind of loosely hangs together. Anyway, so Rabbi Yechanan says, come in clear, that's what it means. In other words, you shouldn't think that the sticks were woven together or something. It means that the actual animals were woven together in order that they should hold together while they're carrying them, or that they're cut. Maybe, no, I don't know.
Carry them out.
Maybe in order to beautify it, I don't know. Okay. Tana. So we learned in a Braisa, loy haya menatchon tuach b'sar oila, when they cut them up, before they burnt them. By the way, there is also a shita of the Ravid who says you are in fact allowed to cut them out up before you take them out of the Azara and out to be burnt. It's just you have to carry each one out all at once. You can't carry some parts of it out now and some parts later. So according to him, for sure, when the Rambam is saying that you cut them partially up and they're still partially attached together, then for sure there'd be no problem with that. It's carried by a few people. Rashi describes it's carried by four people. Two people carrying each of two poles. Yeah.
They have to carry it.
Okay. Yeah. So Tana, we learned when they cut them up before they burnt them, they did not cut them up the way they do with the flesh of the oila. Now, in Oila, the whole thing is burnt on the Mizbeach, but before you burn any of the pieces on the Mizbeach, you have to take off the skin. So they'd hang up the Mishnayos and Tomid, describe it how they did with the Korban Tomid, and it's similar for any other Oila. They hung it up on hooks over there, they stripped off the skin, then they cut it up into pieces, and then they took the pieces and burnt them on the Mizbeach. Here, you're also cutting it up into pieces the same way, but you're not first stripping off the skin. Each piece has its skin on it. So the skin is still attached to the flesh. So the Gemara says, Menahani Mili, where do we know that from? So the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rebbe Omer, Nemer Kan Oru Vosser Perish, here in connection with the Korbanos of Yom Kippur, the Pasuk says that you have to take the animals out and burn them, and it says you have to take them out, Vesofu Ba'eshes, Eroisam Ves, Sodom Ves, Pirsham. You have to burn with fire their skin and their flesh and their waist. Meaning anything that's in their stomachs also gets burnt, and anything that's in their stomachs also gets burnt along with it. So usually they take out the perish before they burn it on the Mizbeach, but here now. The Namalahalan Oda Basir Perish. You have the same, a similar expression when it comes to the Purim and Yisrafim, when it comes to the Par Helam Davash Al Tzibur, or the Par Kari Mashiach, you have a similar kind of thing where it says that they burn the Odom Basir and Perish. So, Malahalan Aide Nituach. Now over there, as we're going to explain soon, how we know this, that over there with the par helam davash al tzibur and other such korbanos, you have to cut them up, but you don't strip the skin off. Afkan ayde nituach, v'lo ayde hefshet. The same it is over here. You cut them up into pieces, but you don't take off the skin. Okay, so v'hosim menolam. So where do we know in turn by there that we should be able to learn from here? So d'tanya, we learn in another braisa. The pasuk says about the power of Kohen Gadol, the power of Kohen Mashiach, we're talking about the one that he brings as a korban if he made a mistake in halacha and then followed it. So the pasuk says v'kirbo yopirshay v'hoitzi. The pasuk says that you take it out with its intestines and with a, the pasuk says al roshay v'al krav v'kirbo yopirshay. So you take head and legs and the insides and its waist. And you take it out. So that teaches us that you take it out still whole. You don't cut it up into pieces first.
Yochu Yisrafenu Shalim. Now, you would think that means then when you're burning it, also it should be whole. You shouldn't cut it up. No. Nemakan Rosh HaRukrav, because the Pasuk also mentions over here, in connection with the power of Kohen Mashiach, it says that you have to burn its head and its legs. The Nemalahalan Rosh HaKrayim, by a regular Korban Ola, you have a similar expression. It also mentions by regular korban ola, it mentions that you have to burn the orchu and a sochem as a roish ves a poder, and a few psukim later it says ves a kraayim. So you have the same word. Malahalanai de nituach. So when it comes to a korban ola, you do nituach. You don't put it on the fire hole. You cut it up into pieces. And as we learned previously in the second parak of Or Masechta, different people carry the pieces to the mizbeach. So Afkanai de nituach, the same way over here, when we're burning the par and the surah and the seraphim, even though that's taking place outside Yerushalayim, the same thing is true, you cut them up into pieces. E malahalinai de hepshit, so then you're going to argue in that case, when it comes to an ola, you strip off the skin before you cut it up into pieces. Afkanai de hepshit, so the same thing that should be over here, when we're burning them outside Yerushalayim. No, Talmud Lamer, of a kirbo your pirshay. Therefore, the pasuk says, that you burn also its inside, its intestines, and its perish, and its waste. So the Gemara says, my Talmudah, where from those words do you get anything about the skin? Amar Papa, so the Papa says, what it means is, kishem shapirshay b'kirbay, just like the perish remains inside it, you don't take out the perish, you don't take it out and burn it separately, achach v'soray b'oray, the same way, this flesh is still inside the skin, you don't take it out. So you can burn it with the skin on. So Rashi explains, in other words, that what we have is that we have a hekesh over here, that just like when you take out the kerev and the peresh, those two things go together, the same way when you're taking out and the ur and the boser, it means they go together. And since we don't need that for when it was taken out, because we already said you take it out whole, then it must mean talking about when you're burning it. Tosfos discusses that a little bit, that we have the rule that we've mentioned before, that with Kodshim, when you learn one thing from another with a Hekish, you can't then turn around and learn from it another thing with a Hekish, and how would that fit over here? So Tosfos learns a little bit differently. The Vesorah refers to all four things. Now, obviously, the Peresh remains inside the Kerev. You're not going to take out the Peresh and burn it separately. It would be a gnai. It would be an embarrassing thing to do that. So, therefore, obviously, you're leaving it in. So, the same thing. It means that everything else is kept together and you don't take anything apart. I mean, you take it apart. You cut it up into pieces, but you don't remove anything from what it was inside. So you don't remove the flesh from inside the skin, just like we're not going to say that you remove the perish and burn it separately.
We don't worry about what it smells like.
So we don't worry about what it smells like, I guess. Yeah. Okay. So the Mishnah had said, "Me'emasai and begodim." We said, again, the people who are burning the par and the sur become tamei. So, and the people who are carrying it become tamei. So at what point did they become tamei? So the Tanakhama had said, once they leave the wall of the, once they go out the wall of the Azara, Reb Shimon had said once the fire catches on to most of the power, most of the pieces, yeah. No, but this is going out of the Azara while carrying the power and the sur, and Xeris HaKosav, that it makes them zombie. The halacha is like the Tanakhama, as it usually is. And in fact, as soon as they leave, they become tamei. And in fact, in Zvachim, it talks about, so for example, you have, let's say, so again, you said you have four people carrying it, two in front and two in back. So let's say, for example, once the people in front have gone out of the wall of the Azara, and the people inside haven't yet, the people in front are tamei, they're already tamei, the people on the inside are not yet. Through carrying the animal, that makes them tamei.
So
the first two walk out, carrying the ends of the pole. No, because how would they?
No.
But, Okay. So, now how do we know this? So turn it up on them. We learn it a brisa. The Pasuk says about these korbanos of Yom Kippur, Yotzi amichut v'machna, it says you should take it out of the machna. The sofu, you should take them outside of the machna, with sofu, and burn them. Now, the words amichut v'machna sounds like it means only one machna. Remember, there were three machnas. There's machna shchina, which is the Azara. There's machna leviyah, which is the harabayis. And there's machna yisrael, which is the whole city of Yerushalayim. So here it just says mechut v'machna. It doesn't specify which one. But pashtus, it means machna shchina, which is where everything up until now has been taking place. So lahalan at the noisimam shalosh machnos. So elsewhere, when it comes to the par koyim mashiach and the par helam davashol tzibur, there it says that they have to be burnt outside all three machnos. V'chan at the noisimam machna achas. Over here, you seem to be saying that you need only one machna, but the fact is it's not like that. As we're going to explain soon, you actually need to take these also out of all three machnas. So why does it say on the chutzpah machna, rather than doing like it says over there and making it clear that you take it out of all three machnas? So im ken loma nami mechutzpah machna. So why does it say mechutzpah machna? Loy maloch, that teaches you. Kivin sheyotza chutzpah machna achas. As soon as they go out of one machna, as soon as they go out of machna shechina, which is the wall of the azara, metamim begadim, then right away they and their clothes become tamim. So that's where we learn what the Tanakhama was saying, that as soon as they walk out of the wall of the azara while carrying this par and soyer, then they become tamim.
But there was a machna. In the
Beit Mishalah
also, right?
No, there's three machnas in Yerushalayim. In the desert, they had, there's machna Shechina, which is the Mishkan, and it's Chotzer. You have machna Leviyah, which is where Leviyim and Moshe and Aaron camp, and machna Yisrael, which is where the rest of the 12 Shvatim camp.
Mitzvah
has to go out of all three, Azov has to go out of two, a Tomei Mes has to go out of one, right? So now, once the Beit Mishalah was built, then the corresponding thing has become the Azara is Machne Shechina, the Harabayis is Machne Leviyah, and Yerushalayim, and the whole city of Yerushalayim, is Machne Yisrael.
That's
so now,
I thought in the Tanakh there's a part where Yisrael was built to go.
There is within the Azara, it's true, you have Ezra's Yisrael and Ezra's Kohenim, but nevertheless, though, that's not considered a separate machne. The fact is, a person goes into any of those places when he's Tomei, he's going to be Chayav Koris, for example. All it is is Ezra's Yisrael, the 11 Amma wide strip for Yisrael, is normally where the Yisraelim will stand. But they're allowed to go closer, as we've learned a number of times, if they're needed for something in the Avodah, to Shecht, or to circle the Mizbeach on Sukkos, or whatever, different things like that. So the pasuk is telling us yotzei mechutzpah machna, which sounds like it means only one machna, because not to say that you only take it out of one machna. You don't burn it someplace on the Har HaBayis. You burn it outside Yerushalayim, which is outside all three machnas, but to tell us that as soon as they leave the one machna, already they're troubled. Rashi brings a different girsa, which he doesn't like, that the Gemara had asked, it says you mechutzpah machna, and it says by the other ones mechutzpah machna, and we make gzeira shava. Rashi doesn't like that girsa. So he has the girsa as we have it over here. B'chlal, we have a lot of times when we learn a Rashi like this, it's a little hard to know. We have to look at other Mephoshim to see what the original girsa was, because what happens is, when Rashi said, we should be goyis like this, then later copyists and eventually the printers took that and put it into the actual Gemara. So now we have in front of us the Gemara that Rashi says is the correct one, and we would have to look elsewhere to find what the original girsa was that Rashi is arguing against. So it says mechut l'machne, teaching us that as soon as they go out of one machne, they become tamim. So v'hosam enolon. Okay, so in turn, by the other korbanos, where do we know that they have to be taken outside all three machnas? So d'tanya, we learn in a b'raisa when the posuk says about the par kori mashiach, v'hotzias kol apor, you should take out the entire par. That means chut l'sholosh machnas. That means outside of all three machnas, so outside Yerushalayim. Now, after oy mechut l'sholosh machnas, you're saying that that's what it means. Oy ena l'chut l'machna achas. Maybe it means only one machna. No, k'shu oy me b'par ha'eda. No, because a few psukim later, it says about the par helam davashol tzibur, where the Sanhedrin made a mistake in halacha. And it says there that you have to take it oy mechut l'machna. It says also that you have to take it oy mechut l'machna. She'en talmud loyma. Now, the posuk did not have to say that. Already it says by the power helam davashol tzibur that you do it exactly as you did to the power koyin mashiach. So there's no reason to mention again the detail that you take it mechut l'machna. So now when it says mechut l'machna again, it means that you have to take it out of two machnas. So far we're not done yet, but so far we see that you have to take it out of both machnas, out of two machnas. So far that would put us someplace in the city of Yerushalayim. Now, by the way, once we have that detail by one of them, then we learn from it to all the other ones. In particular, when the pasuk says over there that he should do to the par as he does to the par of the chatas, we learn from that also. The Gemara has a long, complex sugya about it in Zmachim, that from that we learn also the par of Yom Kippur. So that all these dinim that we're talking about over here are going to apply across the board. They're going to apply to the power of Mashiach and the power of Halim Davashal Tzibur and the power in the Surah of Yom Kippur. And also the Seiri Avodah also. So it's going to apply. You have, there's five korbanos that are Chatoris and Yisrofis. There's the power of Yom Kippur, the Surah of Yom Kippur, the power of Kohen Mashiach, the power of Halim Davashal Tzibur, and the Surah that they bring if that Halim Davar involves Avodah Zarah. So those are the five where the Torah tells us they have to take them and burn them outside the machne. So it was skin, flesh, waste, everything, right? Right. So you have the fat of them goes on the Zbeach, and the blood of them goes in the Heichel, and that fat, right? Okay. So far we're up to two machnes. Now, there's another place where the Torah says that something has to be mechutz b'machne. It says as far as cleaning the ashes off the mizbeach. Now, not the trumas hadeshen that they did every day when they took one panful of ashes off the mizbeach, but rather when the tapuach, when the pile of ashes on the mizbeach is full and they have to take it outside the city, right? So there it says mechutz b'machne also. Now, she'en tamad loimer. Now, it shouldn't have had to say that. Sharek v'anemer, el shepach hadeshen. Because in connection with the power of Kohen Mashiach, it says, where do you burn it? In the place where the deshen is poured out. So wherever that is, then you know that that's where you have to go. So why does it have to say mechutz b'machne again by the deshen? I mean, tenle, machne shlishis means you have to assign a place outside the third machne. So because it says three times mechutz b'machne, by the power of Kohen Mashiach, by the power of Halim Davashal Tzibur, and by Trumas HaDeshen, and we're learning one from the other, therefore that results in that all three of them are, that all of them take place in the same place, outside of all three machnas. And once we have that, then we also learn from that to the power of Yom Kippur. Again, Tosfos gets into a long discussion how exactly that would work, given the rules that we have about Lomid, Min Alomid, the Kodshim, about learning one thing from another and then learning something else from it with Kodshim. Okay, so that's what it is. So you do have to take it outside all three machnas. So in that case, why by the korbanos of Yom Kippur does it say mechutz l'machna? To teach us, the Tanakhama is saying that as soon as they go out of one machna, they're already tamei. On the other hand, Reb Shimon hay mechutz l'machna mai ovetlei. So what is Reb Shimon doing with the mechutz l'machna by the korbanos of Yom Kippur? Where he says, as we said in the Mishnah, that they don't become tummy until the fire catches on to most of the pieces of the korbanos. According to the Tanakhama, as soon as they walk out, they become tummy, right? But according to the Shimon, not. So the Tanakhama learned that from the fact that it says an extra michut b'machne by the korbanos of Yom Kippur. We already have three michut b'machnes. There's no four machnes, so obviously there's no fourth place to bring it to. So therefore, by the korbanos of Yom Kippur, we're learning that as soon as they walk outside of the as soon as they walk out of the Azorah, they become tummy. But Pashtus, it's only for Yom Kippur. Although I think the Mishnah in Zvachim ends up saying that it does apply to the other part of Insirim and Yisrochim as well.
Each one has
a detail that we learn from it. Right. So now, Reb Shimon disagrees with that whole concept. He says only when most of it catches on fire. So what is he doing with that fourth Mechut B'machna? So I mean, look at the Tanya. He uses it for what we learn in another Braisa. He learns it differently. We just have a straight out Gzeira Shava. It says here, Michut Famachne, by Yom Kippur. It says by the Parah Adruma that it takes place Michut Famachne. Makan Michut Vasholosh Machnes, Apahal Michut Vagimel Machnes. The Parah Adruma takes place, the other way around. He says it's a given that the Purim and Nisrochim take place outside of all three machnas. Therefore, we also, we don't use the word Michut Famachne to learn something that we didn't know by the Korbanos of Yom Kippur. Just the opposite. We use Michut Famachne as a source for Gzeira Shava to learn. How do we know? The Parah Adruma is burnt outside of Yerushalayim. You would think it's burnt someplace in the Bais Mikdash or someplace in Yerushalayim.
The pasuk tells us
what is mechut b'machne? Does it mean outside machne shchina? Does it mean outside machne leviyah? Or does it mean outside machne Yisrael? Reb Shimon says that we know by Yom Kippur it means that we know by Yom Kippur it means it means outside all three machnas, which he says mechut b'machne means now, because by the Purim and Yisrofim again. So he may use some of the same limud that we said before, that we are learning it from the power of Kohen Mashiach and the power of Halim Davashal Tzibur, where there it says al shefach hadeshen. So therefore, the Gemara is going to say that not. The Gemara is going to say that he does it in a different direction. So no, Reb Shimon is saying that when it comes to the Korbanos of Yom Kippur, when it says that he has to take it out, Mechutz L'Machna, it means outside of Machna Yisrael. So now we learn from Gzeira Shavah that the same thing is true as far as the Parah Adumah. So, Umar Hawan the Mizrachot Yerushalayim, and vice versa, with the Parah Adumah, it has to be Dafka on the east side of Yerushalayim, on Harazesim, and we know that because the Pasuk says he has to sprinkle the blood El Noichach Pnei Oyomoyed, in the direction of the entrance of the Oyomoyed, which means since the entrance is facing towards the east, then he has to be standing on the east and then facing towards the west.
That's what the war was a little shorter.
So, as we said, the war was a little lower on that side, exactly right. So therefore, so the Parah Adumah was burned outside Yerushalayim, Afkan, the Mizrach HaShav Yerushalayim, the same way, says Reb Shimon, the Gzeira Shavah teaches us that the Parim, that the parents Sarah of Yom Kippur were also burned east of Yerushalayim. Now, Rabbanan, now the Rabbanan who disagree with that, what direction do they say it was? So, Heicha Sarif Lehu, where do you burn them? So, for the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Heicha Nisraf, and in what direction did they take the parents Sarah to burn them? L'tzfoin HaShav Yerushalayim, north of Yerushalayim, L'chutz L'shalash Machnas, outside all three Machnas. So we said before, everybody agrees, outside all three Machnas, but Reb Shimon says they went east of Yerushalayim, outside the three Machnas, and the Chachamim are saying you went north. So in fact, they discovered, I've mentioned before, they discovered about 100-odd years ago, they discovered north, taka north of Yerushalayim, on the area nowadays, more or less like on the edge of a neighborhood called Sanhedria, between in Meir Sha'arim, around the Arab neighborhood, Sheikh Jarrah, whatever, they found large piles of ashes, which they did some chemical analysis on it at the time, and found out that in fact they are ashes of animals. So the pashas, those are the ashes that were deposited there from the Mizbeach, and also, as we're saying over here, from the pine and the sur that were burned. You would think, but actually the description that I saw says that nothing would grow there, so I guess there was too much fat in the ashes, or who knows what, I don't know chemistry, but whatever, I guess okay. Reb Yossi says they're burnt in the Beis HaDeshen. Now, what does that mean? So in other words, everybody is saying, the Chachamim also are saying it's in the Beis HaDeshen. What it means is Reb Yossi says there has to already be Deshen there. It has to be that at least one time before Deshen from the Mizbeach was deposited there. So the question is, so Omar Rava, man Tana de Poligale de Reb Yossi, so which Tana disagrees with Reb Yossi and just says that it doesn't need to be that Deshen was ever placed there, just needs to be the kind of place that's appropriate for putting the Deshen, that would be Reb Elazar ben Yaakov. That would be according to Reb Elazar ben Yaakov. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says about the par helam davar shel tzibur, when it says El Sha'el, or actually Al really, it says in the Pasuk, Shefa Hadeshen Yisarek, it should be burned in the place where the Deshen is poured. That means Shiyahe L'Sham Deshen. So the Tanakama of the Braisa, which we're saying is Reb Yossi, we just said, means that there has to already be ashes there from before, from that they deposited there from the Mizbeach of previous time. Reb Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, and Reb Elazar ben Yaakov says, no, all it means is Shriyeh Makom Meshupach. All it means is that the place should be the side of a hill. Shefach Hadeshen, the word Shefach means pouring. It implies the kind of place where when you pour out ashes, then they don't stay necessarily in one place. They slide down the hill.
So,
not necessarily that steep, but in other words, the point is that it should pour. It shouldn't just stay in one place. So therefore, on the face of it, Reb Elazar ben Yaakov doesn't care whether there's Deshen there or not. He just cares about the topography, about the lay of the land. So therefore, you see that he disagrees and says that there doesn't need to be Deshen. However, Amalei Abaye, the Dumum, Mekayim Meshubah, Hor Depligi, not necessarily. Maybe Reb Elazar ben Yaakov and the Tanakama of the Braisa are only arguing about does it need to be a slope or can it be flat land. But maybe both of them agree that there has to be ashes there from before. Lamaisa, in other places, the Gemara mentions that it's fine even if there's no ashes over there, and therefore that's the halacha, that they can take the pyre and the sur and burn them there even if there's no ashes there from before. As far as Mekayim Meshubach, actually, there is a dip, the Rambam mentions that they have to put it in a place where the wind is not going to blow it away and where pigs aren't going to get to it and whatever, which implies that the Rambam understands Mekayim Meshubach maybe a little bit differently, or very differently actually, than the way Rashi said it right here. Rashi said Mekayim Meshubach means it has to be the side of a hill. The Rambam may understand more, meaning more, if I care, it has to be like a depression, like a natural bowl in the ground where once you put the ashes over there, they're going to stay put.
Like a cave, but like a
depression in the ground where the wind is not gonna scatter it so quickly.
Yeah,
So that's that. So we have the machloikas of the Chachamim and Reb Shimon about when the people who are carrying them become tamei. Again, the Tanakhama said they, as soon as they walk out of the wall of Yerushalayim, he says you learn it from the words Michut Machna, which we didn't otherwise need because we already know it's outside all three machnas. Reb Shimon says, on the contrary, that Michut Machna is being used for a different drasha to tell us about where the Parah Adruma is burnt, and therefore it would mean that they only become Tomei when they're actually burning it. Since the pasuk says, Asurda Foysim, the one who burns them, Yechabes Godov, then that means, yeah. So now the Gemara expands on that. Tana Rabbanan, Asurdaf. The pasuk says the one who burns them, that means Hasurah Matam of Godim, only the ones who are burning them become Tomei. Valaya Matas Zaur, not the ones who light the fire. Valaya Masader Samarafa, not the one who sets up the wood pile in order to burn it. Now, Rashi says, this Brai says, according to the Shimon, the Chachamim, who say that the people who are Tomei, the people who carry it are Tomei, they would have no reason to say that the ones who are preparing the fire wouldn't become Tomei. So it seems the Rambam disagreed with Rashi on that, because the Rambam passed them like the Chachamim. As soon as they walk out of the walls of the Azara, they're Tomei. But on the other hand, he mentions this Braisa. So in other words, the Rambam would understand, yeah, that those are two separate things. The ones who are carrying it and the ones who are actually involved in burning it, those are the ones who become Tomei. But setting up the wood and then lighting the fire, which are prerequisites for that, that's not considered part of the burning, and therefore those people don't become Tomei. The Ezer who are Sodef, so what's the definition of Sodef? Zam Sayyeh, Bashas Srefa. That means somebody who actually helps out while it's burning. So he stokes the fire, he turns the pieces this way and that on the fire in order that it burns thoroughly. Those are the people who become Tomei. Now, Yochol Ach Mishinasu Eifa Matamin Begodim. You would think that maybe it's Matamei, a person who touches it even after they turn to ashes. No, Tamad Lema Oysam. Therefore, the Pasuk says, Vasodef Oysam, the one who burns them. Meaning Oysam, Matamim Begodim. So they're only Matamim Begodim while they're still Oysam, while they're still recognizable as animals. Veloy Mishinasu Eifa, not after they became ashes. Matamim Begodim. Veloy Mishinasu Eifa, Matamim Begodim. They're not Matamei after they became ashes. Rabbi Lozabit of Shimon says a little differently. Hapor, since the Pasuk says that they have to burn the pyre. Now this Pasuk itself doesn't use the word hapor, but the previous Pasuk says that they took out the pyre and the sir, so he understands it still has to be recognizable as a pyre. Matame, only when it's still a pyre or sir is it still matame. Nitahabosar ain't a matame begodim, but once the flesh is dissolved, then you don't need to, not dissolve really, it doesn't dissolve, but whatever. In other words, the point is once it's completely burnt up, then it's not matame begodim. So the Gemara says, so what's the actual difference between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Elazar ben Reb Shimon? Both of them agree that once it's burnt to ashes, it's not Matame anymore. So the answer is, Ikka benayu, the Shavi Charucha. What if it's burnt and now it's a piece of charcoal, but it's not actually ashes? The Tanakhama would say that it's still Matame, but it's not ashes, it's still Oysam. Rabbi Elazar ben Reb Shimon would say that's not recognizable as a pyre anymore, as it's now just a lump of charcoal. Therefore, according to him, it wouldn't be Matame at that point.
No,
the pastor it means that the whole thing is burnt inside and out. But nevertheless, the point is that it's still, it's not actual ashes yet. So,
Does it need longer to come to ashes, or?
Yeah, well, eventually, maybe, yeah. It's being held together by something, right? So maybe if you put it under a microscope, you'd still see fibers of meat in it. But at least to the eye, it looks completely black. Yeah. So the Tanakhama would say it's still Matame at that point. Rabbi Elazar ben Reb Shimon would say that's not. Okay. We said in the Mishnah. Okay. So the Mishnah says, "Amru lo the Kohen Gadol higia sur la midbar." At this point, they tell the Kohen Gadol that the sur has reached the desert. Now, because as we said before, the Kohen Gadol cannot begin with another avodah until that happens. So this is where they take a break. So again, we said before, Rabbeinu Yohanan says during this break that the Kohen Gadol would read from the Torah, which we're going to have now at the beginning of the next Perek. But according to Rashi and everybody else, no, it means they can't do anything else. So it means maybe even the cutting up of the pyre and the sur that we said before, maybe even that had to wait until after they found out that the sur lazazol had been thrown off. Or maybe, as we said before, Rabbi Yosef Kirkus says that maybe they could cut them up. They just can't do it because that's not really an avodah. Or the different explanation also that some of the Mephoshim learn that maybe during this time also they could be sending off the pyre and sur to be burned. They just can't actually burn them yet until they find out the sur has reached the desert.
Also,
So there it's much less of a walk. It's just outside the walls of Yerushalayim, whereas with the Sur Lazazel, 10 or 12 mil. No. The walls of Yerushalayim extended out a considerable distance. But in modern terms, let's say, you know, like I said before, about that pile of ashes that used to be over there near whatever, it's half an hour, 45 minutes walk from the Bismikdash, maybe, yeah. Okay, so they have to tell the Kohen Gadol. There is, by the way, a very interesting explanation from Reb Chaim Brister, who says specifically as far as the reading from the Torah, that he had to wait with that until the Sura reached the desert. The reason is, he says, because as long, the Kohen Gadol cannot leave the Azara until that Avodah is finished. Until the Avodah of Yom Kippur is finished. Now the reading, the Kriyas HaTorah, which we're going to talk about in the next parak, takes place in the Ezra's Noshim. So therefore, he can't leave to go to the Ezra's Noshim until he finds out that the Sur has been dealt with.
The Dagger Lower.
On a Daraisa level, actually, the Ezra's Noshim is just part of Machna Leviya. Certain Tmeim would be allowed to go in there, and so forth. Midrabbanan, you have a Takana. The Gemara we learned in Psachim. The Gemara mentions it in a few places here and there, but they made a Takana in the times of Yehoshaphat, so about 100 years after the first Beis Hamikdash was built, that certain Tmeim, that in particular Tevula Yoim, are not allowed to come into the Ezra's Noshim. And there are certain exceptions that we make for it, and in certain rare cases, but in general, the Chachamim added an extra thing. A Tevul Yom is allowed to go into the Hanabayas, but not into the Chelu, the Ezra's Nashim. So they told the Kohen Gadol of the Sur has reached the desert. Uminayin hoyu yodin shi diya sur the midbar. How do they know that? Dukois hoyu oisin. They made way stations. There's a number of explanations of what the word dukois, how it comes to mean way stations, and there's actually a number of different gyrosois, also dirkois, or did boys, or whatever. Different before we should talk about different possibilities of what they mean. It's Maloshim Dorach, because of like large rock that they would step on to be able to wave signal flags, or it comes from the word darbon, which means like a prod somebody with a stick, because like one waves his flag and prods the next one to do the same. There's even a possibility also that it comes from a Greek word, which means relays. Anyway, so they set all that up before Yom Kippur, or Menifin B'Sudarim, they would wave flags, the Yodin, she'd be a Sur of the Midbar, and that way they know the Sur has reached the desert. In other words, you had somebody, we said before, you had people watching from a distance what he's doing on the mountain over there, on the cliff. So then when they saw that he had pushed it off, then they would wave a flag, and the next person within a line of sight of them would wave their flag, and so forth, and that way the message would be relayed back to Yerushalayim.
It's true that people weren't allowed it all the way, almost all the way.
That people weren't?
They weren't allowed it.
Well, so we said before, they weren't allowed him from one sukkah to the next. We said that. Right. We said they were malavah him from one sukkah to the next. The ones in the last sukkah, according to the Tana of the Mishnah, had not been right there. They had to stay a mil away, but they could still see him. And according to them, we had other opinions in the Gemara. We had Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, who said that they could actually accompany him all the way to the cliff. Yeah.
Because
they wouldn't hear him necessarily, but the point is they would see. But according to that, there were 10 sukkahs and 10 milin, and there were 5 sukkahs and they made 8 of tchumen and whatever, so therefore
we're talking. They want to make sure the person maybe wasn't so
ayyad. That's what we said the other day, right? The Siach Yitzchak had mentioned that point, right? Okay, the point is, in other words, so they had relays with flags, so that way they would signal that they reached the midbar, and then they can go on with the next part of the avodah. Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, "What do you need flags? Bahalo simin gadol ha'olam. They had a great simin to know when it reached the place. Yerushalayim va'ad beis chidudah shloshim milin." From Yerushalayim until Beis Chiduda, and again, there's a bunch of different Yusois, but the exact word is, literally, Chiduda means its sharpness. So in fact, so one possibility, in fact, some of them before should say, it means the area that includes the cliff in it. It's called Chiduda because it has a sharp cliff in it. Rashi points out over here, though, that what it means is it's not the actual cliff itself, it's only the beginning of the Midbar area. You go a certain distance outside of Yerushalayim, you're in the Midbar, and then from there you have to walk several more milin to reach the actual cliff. So from Yerushalayim until Beis Chiduda, which is the beginning of the desert, Shloisha Milin is only 3 Milin. And as the Gemara is going to say, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. He says you don't need to wait with the continuation of Avodah until he reached the cliff and pushed the Sorrow off. It's good enough to just get to the beginning of the Midbar. So that's only 3 mil away. Therefore, Hochen mil. So you had some people are walking a mil. We said people from Yerushalayim are accompanying him 1 mil until the first Sukkah. They come back. It takes them the time it takes to walk a mil back. And they wait about the amount of time it takes to walk a mil. The Rashash points out an interesting thing. They had an easy way, once they're back in the Bais Mikdash, to know how much a mil is. The walls of the Har HaBayis were 500 by 500 amas. The Har HaBayis was a square of 5 by 500 amas. So therefore, all they have to do is walk around the walls, 500, 500, 500, 500 equals 2,000, equals a mil.
So
I'm saying they could send somebody to walk in a circle around the walls of the Har HaBayis, and it comes back and they know that another mil's time has passed. And now you have 3 mil, the Yodin, the Asura, the Midbar. So now they know the Asura has reached the desert, and that's good enough, and they can continue from there.
But 1 mil to get, or 3 mil to get to the Midbar?
So the Midbar is 3 mil. So we're saying you have the people who accompanied him, the 1 mil.
Right.
So let's put it in terms of time. Let's say it takes 18 minutes to walk a mil. So then what it is they're taking 18 minutes to walk with him to the first sukkah. Then they leave and they head back to Yerushalayim. It takes them another 18 minutes to get back. So now they wait another 18 minutes, which is, again, that Rashash is saying they can measure that. They could estimate how long 18 minutes is. Or if they want a more precise thing, they could have somebody walk around the walls of the Har HaBayis and know more precisely. Anyway, so then 54 minutes have passed. That's 3 mil. Then at that point, you know the Sirdah has reached the desert. According to the Behorder, that's good enough to go on with the Avodah. You don't have to wait until he reached the cliff, which is another 7 mil or 9 mil away.
Additional,
remember we said before, it was 10 or 12 mil, according to the different opinions, right? So therefore, so according to the Behorder, you don't necessarily need signal flags. You just need to know how long it takes to walk 3 mil. Rabbi Shmuel has a third opinion. In fact, they had a different simon. Now, by the way, Hagoyis HaGro put this in parenthesis, and Hagoyis HaBach says that it's actually a braisa, it doesn't belong in the Mishnah. Anyway, so he says there's another way they had a simon to know when the sow reached where it's supposed to be. There was a strip of red wool hanging on the door of the Heichel. When the sow reached the desert, then the strip would turn white. Shenema, the pasuk says, even if your averis are red and stained like scarlet, they'll become clean as snow. They'll become white as snow. Now, so the other tanoim, we talked about yesterday or the day before, that originally they had it hanging on the door of the Ulam, but then if it didn't turn white, then everybody would be embarrassed. So then they started hanging it inside, and eventually they sent it off with the Sar La'Azazel. So the other Tanoyim might agree with Rabbi Shmuel that, yeah, when times were good, they could use that, and they don't need any other simon. But when times weren't so good, then they needed some other simon, so then they needed to signal flags or to know how long it takes to walk 3 mil according to the different opinions.
I was also under the impression that when he picked up the lotto.
No, it didn't turn white. No, that's not what it turned white.
So always once it was out there?
So that's the thing. So originally they had it hanging on the door of the Ulam, and only after the Sur was pushed off the cliff, only then would it turn white. But then sometimes it wouldn't even turn white then, and we said everybody was embarrassed, and therefore they eventually made the takana that he ties half of it to a rock and half of it between the horns of the Sur La'Azazel, as we talked about the other day. So now at that point, they don't have that simon available anymore, so therefore they need flags or whatever. Now, so...
When it's wrapped around the horn and it's walking up and they're taking it out,
it's still red. With that said, some of the Mephoshim explain that the other Tanoim are arguing for Mishmal, even on that. They say not necessarily would it only turn white when he pushed it off the cliff. It might turn white much earlier, and therefore, so that wouldn't be a reliable simon. So therefore, they needed some other simon. Therefore, they needed the flag, or according to the Behorder, you have to know how far. Yeah. Amar Abayis, the Gemara says, Shma mina beis chidudei b'midbar kaima. We see from this Mishnah that this beis chidudei is located in the midbar. V'ha kamash malon. So what does Abayis want to tell us with that? It means he wants us to know the kasavar of Yehuda, given she via sur the midbar nasis mitzvah. So you should know that Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with the other chachamim. He says that you don't have to reach the cliff for the Kohen Gadol to be able to go on with the avodah. Once the sur reached the beginning of the desert, that's good enough in order to be able to continue. The halacha is not like them. The halacha is like the chachamim that it needs to actually reach the cliff and be pushed off. So then they'd have to be waiting a few hours, and then so they'd use the signal flags. Okay. Hadron halach shnei seder. So now that's true. They have to be, I guess, they'd have to keep them for the next couple of hours. They'd have to keep them busy. Yeah. So again, according to Rabbeinu Yonasan, that's why they would be laning now in order to help fill up that time.
Okay.
According to Rabbi Yehonasan, the laying could take place during this time. The other avodas, the next part of the avoda, where he's going to change into big days of and continue bringing korbanos, that has to wait till the sorrow reaches the desert. He learns that the laning, that the Gemara is going to mention soon, the laning is not considered an avoda.
But you have to go out from the market.
And that's according to the Chaim Brisker. Remember, there are several different opinions over here. According to most Rishonim, that the laning had to wait until after the Sur reached the desert, until after it reached the cliff, then one reason for that would be based on what Chaim Brisker says, that he can't leave the Azorah until then. Rabbeinu Yehonasan has a whole different shita, which is that they could do the laning during that time, they just can't do other avoiders during that time. So the Mishnah starts off, continuing with the Seder of the Seder Havoda. Boloi Kohen Gadol Likros. Now the Kohen Gadol comes to Lain. And the reason why he needs to Lain, Rashi brings from the beginning of our Masechta that just like by the Miluim, Moshe had to Lain from the Torah, the Psukim, that describe what he's doing. So the same way over here, the Kohen Gadol has to Lain and describe what he did. Now, why is he doing it after now? So again, we had Rabbeinu Yehonasan's explanation. Tosfos Yeshanim, who hold that you had to wait with it until after the Sur reached the desert, he says, fine, but what it is at this point, you've done the major avodah of the day. All that's left is to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim later and then bring out the Kafan Machta. And you also have a break now, and so therefore it's a good time now to Lain and in particular you're going to be laning, you're going to be telling everybody what he accomplished so far. So therefore it's a good time also to say brachas, which we're going to say. He says brachas after laning, asking Hashem to forgive the Jewish people, the Averus, and so forth. Now that he accomplished most of the kapara. Im rotza likris bevigde boots, if he wants to lay in wearing the linen garments, the same ones that he was wearing for the avoda the whole time, koda, then he can do that. The imlav, and if not, koda beitzelis, lava mishaloi, if not, that he can wear an itzelis, a white itzelis of his own. Rashi defines an itzelis as something like a choluk, like a long shirt, in which case it looks similar to the ksonis of the kohen gadol, but it's not actually big bikorna. And we learned earlier in the Masechta that that could even be something that belongs to him, but he would have to give it to the tzibur. His mother made it for him, for example. Right. Tosfos Yeshanim learns differently. They say that itzelis actually means something more like a cloak. So it's not a choluk, which is a shirt that has sleeves or whatever. It's more like a cloak that wraps around the body, which is not really anything, which is not really like any of the big kohen at all. So how do they do it? Chazan a Knesset Neutral Sefer Torah. The chazan, meaning the shamish of the shul, there was a shul on the Hanabayas. So the shamish of that shul, he would take a Sefer Torah. Rashi and Baba Basra says that they would take the Sefer Torah from the Oren in the Kodesh HaKadosh.
Going back in again.
So it means somebody would have to go in and get it, I guess, yeah. Fine, the Kohen Gadol is only supposed to go in a certain number of times, but they could send in somebody to take it, same way as you send in workers in order to repair things in the Kodesh HaKadosh when necessary. Yeah, that's only if they had to, if there was no other way to do it other than going in straight, then they were allowed to go in straight, yeah. Maybe Rashi would learn that the Kohen Gadol took the Sefer Torah out with him one of the times when he came out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Anyway, not everybody agrees to that. Yes, I mean that it's just a different Sefer Torah. Anyway, so the Chazan HaKnesses, the Shamash of the Shul, takes that. The word Chazan, by the way, now nowadays we use the word Chazan, meaning the one of Davin and Yomur. The meaning of the word Chazan, it comes from the Shurash Choza, which means to see. Because the Shamash of the Shul sees what needs to be done around the Shul and takes care of it. So he takes the Sefer Torah, the Noisna L'Rosh HaKnesses, he gives it to the president of the shul, which Rashi describes. The Rosh HaKnesses is the one who decides who has the various kibbutim in shul, who gets the Torah, who davens by the Amud, etc. That's the Rosh HaKnesses. So the Shamash gives it to him. Rosh HaKnesses Noisna L'Skan, he in turn hands the Sefer Torah to the Skan. V'Skan Noisna L'Kohen Gadol, the Skan gives it to the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol Oymen of a Kabbal, the Kohen Gadol stands up and takes the Torah, and he starts laying. Achrim Mois, he lays the parasha of the section of Achrim Mois that talks about Yom Kippur, like we do nowadays. But Achva also, he also lays the psukim from Parashas Emor that talk about Yom Kippur. Now there, as the Gemara is going to eventually explain, we're going to talk about Amdaf Ayin, you could roll from one to the other, because from Parashas Achrim Mois until Parashas Emor is not that far, it's not Tircha D'Tzibura, while the Metargim is typing the last pasuk, he can already be rolling, it's only a couple of columns further. Then the girl will say the Torah, then he rolls up the Sefer Torah, or Manichi the Chekoi, he puts it in his lap, But Omer, and he says, Yosum, Rasha Kodesi Lefnechem, Shadok Karasi Lefnechem, Kosev Khan. There's more written in this Torah than what I read to you. In other words, because he's going to be reading another part of the Torah, but he's going to be reading it from Parshas Pinchas, but he's going to be reading it Baal Peh. You don't want people to think that, you don't want people to think that those psukim are missing from the Sefer Torah. So he says, these psukim are in the Sefer Torah. The reason I'm not learning it from the Torah, as the Gemara is going to explain later, is because of Tircha D'Tziburah. It would be a big Tircha D'Tziburah for them to have to wait while he rolls from Emor to Pinchas. Well, it means, in other words, he puts it like in a fold of his garment or something. Cheka means more like his bosom. So like he puts it, yeah. Okay. Then over also Shabbachomash Abkudim Khar Al Pet. Then he reads the section beginning over also the 4 or 5 psukim over there, which talk about Yom Kippur, about the Musafim of Yom Kippur. He reads that by heart, which we'll see in the Gemara why he does that. Okay. Next, Umavorach Alei Shmoina Brachos. He makes 8 brachas on his laning. Ala Torah. Number 1 is the bracha after laning the Torah, Asher Nasamanu. Now he says a bracha beforehand as well, but according to many Mephoshim, the Mishnah is not listing that because there's no chiddush in that. Now in those times, the way it worked in those times was the first person who got an aliyah would make the beginning bracha, and the last person who got an aliyah would make the last bracha. So you didn't have like nowadays where every person says both brachas. The Gemara in Megillah explains why they changed it. But anyway, the point is, so the fact that he said the bracha, Asher Bracha Banim, before laning, there's no chiddush in that. So therefore we're not counting that. So we're starting from the brachas after the laning, where there's a chiddush. So he starts by saying the bracha Asher Nasan Lanu, like we do after we lane. That's Ala Torah. Bala Avoida, he says a bracha for the Avoida. So Rashi describes, he says, the bracha of Ritzei from Shemoneh Esrei. But of course, nowadays we say in the bracha Ritzei, v'hoshev ha'avodah l'dir b'secha, that you should restore the avodah to the b'smetah. In those times, you said it differently. You said, Rashi brings the nuskah, Ritzei v'amcha Yisrael, v'sirtza ha'avodah l'dir b'secha, you should accept the avodah that's being done in your holy house. And the Ishni Yisrael's philosophy, Avos Chal Baratzin, etc. And then instead of finishing off, like we do, Hamasu Shchnas Alatziyad, he finished off, but Sha'os Chalavadcha B'Yira Navar, that we serve you alone with Yira. In fact, Nusach Ashkenaz, Ad Hayom Hazeh, on days when there's going to be Duchening, then they finish the Bracha that way, right? Right. But in the times of the Bismikash, that was the standard way of finishing it, because they don't have to say Hamasu Shchnas Alatziyad, Hashem Shchnas already in Tziyad, yeah. So that's the second bracha. The third one is Val Haidah. He says the bracha of Haidah, which is the bracha of Moedim from Shemoneh Esrei. Rashi explains, why is he saying those brachas? So he's saying Al HaAvodah, he just did the Avodah, so now he's thanking Hashem so now he's asking Hashem to accept the Avodah that he did favorably. And then once we say Ritzei, we say Moedim right afterwards. Whenever you have Avodah, then right away afterwards you have to have Haidah. So those two. Then Val Mechila Sa'oven. Then he says a bracha asking Hashem to forgive the Jewish people their avodas. So Rashi says that it's the bracha, the middle bracha of Shemoneh Esrei of Yom Kippur, where we finish off Mechor Laban, where we say Mechor Laban Esenu B'Yom Kippurim Azeh, B'Yom Slichus Oven Azeh, etc. And we finish off Melech Melechu V'Seleich Laban Esenu, Laban Esam V'Seseo. The Rambam has a different understanding of this and a few of the other brachas. The Rambam understands basically the bracha Slach Lanu from Shemoneh Esrei, but with a different ending. Instead of Chanan Amar V'Lasloyach, it has a different ending. Or something like that. Then he says a bracha regarding the Beis Hamikdash, davening for the Beis Hamikdash, that should continue to stand. Rashi says it finishes Baruch Shabbacha, but Baruch Hashem Shabbacha, but Mikdash. The Rambam has a different. The Rambam has a different Then he says a bracha regarding the Jewish people for themselves. He asks that Hashem should continue to help the Jewish people not so much to help the Jewish people, that's going to be later, but thanking Hashem for choosing the Jewish people, like Abba Bachartono or something like that. So he says a bracha for that. Val Yerushalayim b'fnei atzma, he says a bracha regarding Yerushalayim, that it should continue to stand, that the Shechinah should still rest in it. Val HaKoyanim b'fnei atzma, he says a separate bracha for the Koyanim. And here you have different Yerushalayim over here that take out some of these or rearrange some of these or whatever. And then for the rest of the tefillah, which is that he, as the Gemara is going to say, he asks in general that Hashem should help anybody who needs help. And he finishes off Baruch Atah Hashem Shemayat Tfilah. So those are his 8 brachas. So there's slightly different understandings among the Mephoshim what the 8 brachas are, and maybe they take out some of them. Maybe, for example, they take out the one Baal HaKoyin B'fnei Atzman, and then they do count the bracha before. Whatever, it comes out, there are 8 brachas, one way or the other.
The Mishnah continues, Haroya Kohen Gadol Kru Kore, anybody who watches the Kohen Gadol while he's leaning, Eino Roya Pair V'Sorah Nisrafin. He can't also watch the Pair and Sorah being burnt outside Yerushalayim. V'Haroya Pair V'Sorah Nisrafin, Eino Roya Kohen Gadol Kru Kore. V'Loi V'Pneisha Eino Rashoi. Now, it's not because he's not allowed to. It's not like you're not allowed to leave one in the middle and walk over to see the other one. Ela Shahisa Derek Rechoika. They're a far distance apart. Like we said before, it's, you know, 45 minutes or an hour's walk or whatever to the Beis HaGeshen. So it's a far walk. They're both taking place at the same time. So therefore, so it's one or the, you pick one or the other, which one you're going to watch. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Midi katani be'itzlitz lava mishalai. You're saying the Kohen Gadol has the option to lane wearing an itzlitz of his own. Well, according to Rashi, again, an itzlitz is a shirt, a long shirt, and like a tzonis, and according to Tosfos Hashanim, it's a wrap, it's a cloak, whatever. We're saying that he can do that. Miklal the kriya lava avodi. So therefore, you see that this laning is not considered an avoda. On the other hand, the katani imrotz alikris the bigde boots kore. But we're also saying that he has the option of laning while wearing the bigde kohuna. Shamat mina, can we prove from that bigde kohuna nitnuli lehonis behen, that you're allowed to have hana from bigde kohuna? You're allowed to be wearing them not in the time of the avoda, because on the face of it, not doing avoda now, and yet he's able to wear them. On the other hand, the Gemara says not necessarily. Dealing with shiny kriya, it's tzorach avoda. Not necessarily. This kriya satorah is a necessity for the avoda, like Rashi said before, just like by the miluim, where you have to lane. Well, okay, Tosfos Hashanim had said it's more that you should be davening that the avoda should be accepted and whatever, but it's related to the avoda. So therefore, in other words, so that doesn't necessarily mean that a Kohen would be able to walk down the street, let's say, in the big corner, not necessarily. But maybe in this case, where it's related to, it's not an actual avoda, but it's at least something necessary for the avoda, then he's allowed. Fine, but a talus doesn't have the same kedusha as the big corner. So in fact, we have a question. Big de kohuna nitnu lehanas behen or nitnu lehanas behen. Are you allowed to have hanah from the big de kohuna or not? Are you allowed to wear them outside of the time of the avodah or not? So Toshma, let's bring a proof for the first proof. The Mishnah says in Masechta Tomid, loyho yushenim of big de kodesh. It says the kohenim who were on duty in the Mishmikdash would not sleep in the holy clothes, implying shenahu deloy, implying that they're not allowed to sleep in them. And the reason is because it actually says that they might pass gas while they're wearing them, in the same way while they're sleeping, in the same way you're not allowed to pass gas wearing tefillin, the same way not while you're wearing big de kohuna. So implying halmechel achli, implying they're allowed to eat. They're allowed to eat while they're wearing the big dikona. So therefore, you see, you're allowed to have enough from them. Bigmas is not necessarily. Again, eating the kobonis is also necessary for the avoda. As the pasuk says, they should eat them, that the kapara was done with them. You see from that, the kohenim eat the kobonis, and the owners get their kapara through that. So maybe they're allowed to eat, because Sarah Chavodah, that doesn't necessarily prove that they were, for example, just allowed to walk around in them. On the other hand, the Gemara says, okay, but Shena Hu Deloy, fine, you're saying they're not allowed to sleep in them. Ha-Heluchi Mahalchi. The implication is they can walk around in them. Otherwise, why is it saying, Loy Hu Yishen in the Big Dekodesh? It should say something like Loy Mahalchi in the Big Dekodesh. The answer is, not necessarily, because you could say, Bedinhu Dahaluchi Nami Loy. Really, maybe you could say they're not even allowed to walk around with them. As soon as they're done the Avoda, they have to take them up. The safer, it's Tirichalei. The only reason why it would say that they can't sleep in them is not really because of that. The reason why I mentioned sleeping is because it wants to tell us the safer where it continues that they wouldn't sleep in the big corner, but pushed in, they would take them off from a kaplan and they would fold them up, and put them under their heads. So in other words, so you're right. Maybe the Mishnah means they're not allowed to walk around in them either, but there's no chiddush in mentioning that. The Mishnah mentions specifically that they couldn't sleep in them to say they're not allowed to sleep in them, but they are allowed to fold them up and put them under their heads. Well, then that still asks, Nu, from that alone, you see you can have enough from them, because they're using them as a pillow. The answer is, no, because it doesn't mean that they put them under their heads, it means they put them next to their heads. So that doesn't show anything, so that doesn't show that you can have anah from them at all. So that could mean you're not allowed to have anah from them at all. As soon as you're done the avoda, you have to take them off. And at night, when they took them off to go to sleep, they wouldn't even put them under their heads, they'd put them next to their heads. Okay, so the Gemara will continue. We'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with the continuation of the discussion of what they did with the Bigdei Kahuna and how we can show that they put them next to their heads rather than under their heads. And then we're going to get into some Agadta about wearing the Bigdei Kahuna outside the Beis Mikdash.
One question, Alexander.
Right, Alexander. Yeah, what's the question?
Why don't we bow every time we say Kerum Mishtachavim? Why once, I think, or twice, we don't.
Once we don't by the girdle when he says Lashem Chapas. So we talked about that at the time, I think, when we got to that part of the Avodah, we talked about it. The Shara Kol has a long explanation that Al Pi Kabbalah you're only supposed to be bowing three times during the Avodah, and since this one is different than all the other ones, he brings sources that maybe they only bowed when the Kohen Gadol says Lifnei Hashem Titoru. And here he's not saying that, he's only saying Lashem Chatos. So we say the words Vakoyim because they did bow in the Beis Mikdash, but Al Pi Kabbalah we only need to bow when he's saying Lifnei Hashem Titoru, and that's only three times, and therefore we bow only the three times.
And that's when they offer the Chatos, you're saying?
So the three times when we do bow are when he does the vidui on the power of Kohen Gadol for himself and his family, when he does the vidui on the same power again for himself and his family and all the Kohenim, and the third one is when he does the vidui on the Surah Lazazel for the whole Jewish people. Then you have, in between those, is when he does the Gadol on the Surah Lashem and the Surah Lazazel. So that one we're saying, we save our Kohenim, but we don't bow by that one because he doesn't say Lifnei Hashem Titoru there.
Mm-hmm. Shkayach.
Yeah.